Happy Friday, fantasy baseball friends, and welcome to the third week of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and we have a loaded show for you today where we're going to welcome in guest Jared Court, the co-founder of MoxieBall.com, Fantasy Pros correspondents Kyle Borgannoni, and JP Gale. We're going to be talking about some buy high, sell low candidates, give a rundown of the news items of the week, and what it means for your fantasy teams. We're going to key in on some popular waiver wire pickups and answer some burning questions for week four, discuss some of the wacky stats of the year, and finally, we're going to prepare you for tonight's big DFS slate, where FanDuel and DraftKings both have $400,000 events. If you haven't played yet and want to sign up, you can click the link through our site, and if you do and deposit $10, they'll give you your money back if you lose your first contest. If you want to skip along to any certain portion of the podcast, the producer is going to list the time slots on this page so you know where to jump ahead. All right, here we go. Now we welcome Jared Court of MoxieBall.com. Jared's a co-founder of MoxieBall, where they have great DFS advice that I use quite a bit. And Jared has plenty to show for his DFS expertise. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he can be found at Jared's Got Moxie. Hey, Jared, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Bobby. Good to see you, or good to talk to you.
So what we're going to be doing today is a segment called Buy High, Sell Low. Basically, I want you to tell our listeners whether it's a good idea to target a player in trade or to trade them away while you can. Are you ready to begin?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so should we be buying low on Troy Tulowitzki, or is his career on a steep decline?
You know, he's a perfect example of someone that I would absolutely say you need to buy low on him. And there are a few key numbers that do jump out to me. The first would be, and this would be entering last night's game, a 150 BABIP so far. His walk rate is still a little bit lower than you'd like it to be, but April has traditionally been his worst month as a major league pro, and that's over quite an extensive career. So we've got a pretty substantial sample size, but he does have some warning signs this year, which I can certainly understand, being a couple reasons to be pessimistic, but overall, I do watch a lot of Jays baseball being here in Toronto, and looking at some of the advanced stats, I really don't see a lot to worry about when it comes to him over the long run. And so if you do have the opportunity to get him from someone that's getting a little anxious and wants to unload him, I would absolutely jump on the opportunity. Like I mentioned, April is almost always his worst month and has been over the course of his career. So you could be in this position to gain some significant profit if you buy low.
I agree with that insight, and I didn't realize his BABIP was that low. I mean, this is a guy who hit 340 2 years ago, so it's not like this is just suddenly going to be a bad fantasy shortstop.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, if you also look at the protection he's got around him in the Blue Jays lineup with Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's a bit of an all-star team situation from an offensive standpoint there, and he's got nowhere to go but up. And like I said, sometimes you need to use the eye test a little bit. And watching as much baseball as I do, I mean, this guy can still hit. His swing looks great. He's tinkering a little bit with a bit of a toe tap versus a leg kick, but when push comes to shove, he's gonna settle in, and he's gonna make you really happy if you can find a way to get him on your squad.
So, Jared, are you buying low on Justin Verlander, or is the bounce back people expected not going to come?
You know, Bobby, I'm definitely somewhere in between. You know, he had a very solid ERA last year at 3.38. But when you look at the advanced metrics, it really didn't really check out for me. You know, he's got a 4.15 xFIP, ground ball rate of only 34.6%. That for me, that leaves a lot to be desired, especially when you take a look at the trend that he's had both from velocity and from a strikeout rate. Right? I mean, like through his first two starts, you know, his walk rate has nearly doubled, you know, where it was last year. And while it's a small sample size, his ground ball rate is down even more, like under 30%. You know, the things that do kind of work in his favor, he does limit the home runs, you know, and that's something that is quite interesting considering he has such a low ground ball, right? But, you know, if they continue to hold in the mid-single digits from a home run to fly ball ratio perspective, he could put, you know, his floor in a situation where, you know, at worst, he's maybe a 4.5 ERA guy. But for me, the big thing that makes Justin Verlander is his velocity. And that's what made him the elite pitcher that he was in the early part of his career. However, you know, right now he's definitely a far cry from the guy that used to average 96 miles an hour on the gun, because he's sitting at under 92 on average through his first two starts. And as this continues to go down, he definitely becomes more hittable, and I worry about his ability to be effective over the long run. And I'll be honest, you know, this is really just a long way of me saying that I would really not be buying low on him, and would even try to see if you can get a guy like a young Adam Conley, who I'm very high on, or a Patrick Corbin or Raisel Iglesias for him, you know, right now, as I expect them to all, at the end of the year, have better stats and have more innings under their belt by the end of the season.
I was one of those guys that had very high expectations for Justin Verlander going into the season. I mean, I was looking at his 103 innings after the All-Star break, 95 Ks, and like you said, that's not as good as he used to be. But he also had a 2.8 ERA, and I thought this is a guy who's going to bounce back a lot this season and be a lot better than where we're drafting him. He's bitten me so far, and you know what? I'm thinking about trading him for a closer. So I think that what you shared makes a lot of sense, and I'm definitely going to be considering it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him is that and there's so many guys in fantasy baseball that kind of fall into this, because the name value of Justin Verlander alone will definitely do two things. Number one, it'll make him a little bit more appealing to you and a little bit of sex appeal, so to speak, when you know on draft day and you're looking at guys that might be lower in the rankings and still around later in the rounds that you might not expect them to be in, and you kind of go at them. Or on the plus side, and hopefully in your case, you can get someone that still believes that he's got a lot of gas left in the tank. And I'm just pessimistic, and really just because of the advanced stats not really checking out for me. And if the velocity goes down, like I mentioned, and the strikeout rate follows suit, you're looking at a guy that's really, you know, not really even in the mixed league conversation. So see what you can get for him and keep me posted.
Yeah, I absolutely will. And another guy that's got tremendous velocity, 6'6", Noah Syndergaard. He's off to a blazing start. 13 innings, 21 strikeouts. He's given up one earned run. Should we be selling high on him right now? Or would you hang on to him? Is he going to be a Cy Young candidate?
You know what? Honestly, I almost never say this about guys that have, you know, fairly small sample size or haven't really shown a ton of what they can do at the major league level. But all I can say is do not sell Noah Syndergaard. I mean, he's absolutely unbelievable. Through his first couple starts, you mentioned some of the stats, you know, that speaks to a 14.5 K per nine. And that's not going to be sustainable over 200 inning season. But the skill set is absolutely elite. And I do believe that he will be in the conversation with Kershaw at the end of the year for one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I do firmly believe that. He's got that velocity that everyone is absolutely drawn to, and it's so good, and it's kind of like Mariano Rivera situation where you know it's coming, but you still can't hit it because the stuff is just so good. He's got a skill set that really, you know, puts him in a league of his own. He limits his walks, you know, at under 2 per 9 innings. Will likely finish with a K per nine over 10, while having really, really low hard hit rates. And for that, I mean, I don't really need to go much more into detail, but everything like that for me really checks out extremely well, and he grades out as one of my favorite guys coming into the year, and will continue to be as a top notch starting pitcher over the next couple of seasons. And it would not shock me whatsoever to see him as an early to mid first round pick come 2017.
I would definitely agree with that potential. And you want to talk about fantasy sex appeal? I mean, the guy's name is Thor. Thor. I want a guy like that on my team.
I just wish I had a cool nickname like that too. I mean, it's badass.
Well, maybe we can give you one. So Jared, are you gambling on keeping Gene Segura, or are you going to sell him high while his value is still up there?
You know, this was a tricky one. I've been hard on Segura in the past. I know one of the articles I actually wrote a couple of years ago for our site Moxieball was saying that you should absolutely not draft him where he was going. And that was after he came off his 12 home run season with the Brewers, where he hit, I think it was something like 290 and he stole 30 or 35 bags, just absolutely outperforming every advanced stat and being way better than he should have been. It turned out to be right, because for the couple years after that, he came down to earth and was more of a 5 home run, 20-25 steal guy while hitting, you know, 250, 260. And that's who he is. And so if anyone's expecting more than that, you're kind of kidding yourself a little bit. And I can understand why there might be a little bit of optimism. I mean, he's averaged a home run for every three games he's played so far this year. But with a 5'10 frame and 26 career home runs over nearly 2,000 plate appearances, the guy just doesn't have the power. So, I mean, you're not really looking for someone to continue that home run pace. And he could hit 5 to 7, maybe 8 or 9 kind of thing. But I don't really think that it's fair to assume that he's going to hit that 12 to 15. Like, I think people for some reason still think he can. Now, I will say this, though. Finding guys with upside for 30 bags or 30 steals, rather, in today's major leagues is not the easiest thing to do, especially when they play a relatively thin position, being shortstop. and can chip in with a little bit more, you know, in terms of some peripherals, whether it's, you know, another 40 or 50 RBIs, maybe 5 to 7 home runs, 70 to 75 runs scored, et cetera. You know, he could still, you know, continue to have value. I just don't expect him to hit anywhere close to the 412 he is right now, or even 280. He's going to settle in closer to 260 when all is said and done. But if you can get a guy, you know, for example, like Troy Tulowitzki, who we talked about before, as a one-for-one offer, I would 100% pull the trigger on that trade, because you're selling high on an asset, buying low on another, and net-net, you're going to be profiting down the road, and I would absolutely jump on that opportunity.
Now let's move on to another shortstop. We've got Trevor Story. I don't even have to say what's been going on with him. He's just been phenomenal. I mean, my two-year-old son knows what's going on with Trevor Story. Is now the right time to sell, or did we miss our window?
You know, first of all, like what a way to start a major league season, let alone a career. I mean, it's truly incredible. The guy's been absolutely mashing, but I don't think anyone's expecting this kind of pace to continue, right? I mean, he's not going to hit 60. He's not going to hit 50 or 40. In all likelihood, he's probably going to settle somewhere into the 20 to 25 home run ranges, which is even higher than I would say most experts even graded him out before the season started. Granted, he does get to play half of his game in Coors Field, and that's always a great thing. And us DFS enthusiasts and experts all know how important that is when it comes to lineup construction. But, you know, one quick look at the numbers, he's got a home run to fly ball ratio over 40%. That's a fact. And another fact is that guys just don't sustain that. It's just not realistic. It doesn't happen. He doesn't walk. You know, we saw that in AAA last year as well. He's only got one walk and 37 plate appearances heading into last night's game as well with the Giants. And he's striking out an alarming 32.4% of the time. For me, those are big red flags of long-term success being a bit of a challenge for him as pitchers in the league does adjust, which happens all the time, especially with young guys. He's going to have to do the same. And almost every time, almost every time takes longer for the hitter to make an adjustment back when the pitchers and scouting reports start making changes going up against the hitters. So 100% sell him. Honestly, I would absolutely sell him right now. The value is not going to get any higher. But I will say this with a caveat that the juice needs to be worth the squeeze. In keeper leagues, I would need another capable asset back that would help me for the next number of years. But in seasonal formats, if you could flip him for one or two, you know, relatively elite and maybe struggling guys out of the gate, I would definitely be all over that.
I'm with you on that. I'd definitely trade Trevor Story. I'm here with Jared Court, co-founder of MoxieBall.com, and we're talking about some of the buy or sell options at this point in the season. Now we're going to move on and talk about some of the big news items from the week. There's been discussion about Jacob deGrom being shut down at least for 15 days with a lat problem. Should we be worried about him for the long term, or is this just a precaution?
Yeah, I mean, these kind of injuries always concern me. And this one hurts a little bit for me because I absolutely hate that DeGrom is having health issues right now. He's one of my favorite pitchers to watch in the game. His control and command is absolutely amazing. And I just love watching him work. But, you know, I definitely think you need to be mindful that this is the type of injury that can certainly linger over the course of a season. So there's definitely cause for concern. And I'm not ready to jump conclusions on this one, but look at what happened. You know, when you see guys like Matt Cain, when they were relied on for big innings earlier on in their career, you know, especially when they go deep in the playoffs, like the Mets did with their World Series run last year, it certainly had an effect on their ability to be effective, but more importantly, stay on the field. So I'm definitely not ready to jump ship on DeGrom. He's a lot younger. He's really only had 1 year of those significant innings under his belt. But I would hold him if you drafted him, as you likely spent a really high pick. But if you're nervous and someone in your league is offering up a solid, you know, but healthy arm with maybe 85 to 90% of the upside, I wouldn't blame you if you pulled the trigger. So, I mean, you know, some names that come to mind when you look at the ADPs, you know, Corey Kluber, Dallas Keuchel, you know, Chris Archer, Carlos Carrasco, Felix Hernandez, etc. All those guys, for the most part, went after DeGrom in your drafts. And if someone, you know, especially when he comes back, you know, is willing to give you a little love for one of those players, you know, I could certainly see pulling the trigger on one of those and not really being concerned about the outcome there.
You know, if he does go down, there's a guy sitting in the wings in AAA. His name's Rafael Montero. At the same age, at the same level, he posted a better ERA and a better whip than Noah Syndergaard. Now, I'm not saying that this guy has the stuff that Syndergaard does, not even close. But if he does get called up, he's a guy that I'm picking up. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, Montero's definitely been on the prospect radar for a couple of years. And, And to your point, his minor league numbers, you know, really do jump off the page. So I would not hesitate picking him up. I think he could fill in admirably. And I think there actually might be a really good chance that he gets called up if he hasn't been already, to whether it's take that spot or be a reliever in the bullpen for them. And he's got a lot of talent. Let's just hope he can put it together at the major league level.
Now, Jared, let's move on to two guys who were put on the DL. First, we'll start with Glenn Perkins, the closer of the Twins. Now, you wouldn't know he's the closer of the Twins because the Twins just can't win a game. He was placed on the DL with a shoulder strain. So who's going to be the closer for the Twins? Is it Kevin Jepsen, who got some work last year, or is it the hard-throwing Trevor May, who led the minor leagues in Ks one year?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that point on Trevor May, because he's going to be my guy here. And I know that may not be the popular sentiment right now, but I think over the long run, I think that one's going to really grade out for us. And so definitely with May. I mean, I love his K upside. I mean, you look at his minor league numbers, you watch him pitch, you look at his stature. The guy's got strikeout pitcher written all over him. And frankly, so far in the year, he's just looked like the better pitcher, you know, both from the eye test and on the field when you actually look at the numbers. And Jepsen, you know, is a lot older than May as well. So there is some more wear and tear on that arm. And he wasn't great in the spring. He hasn't been fantastic so far this year. So it wouldn't surprise me if the next Twins save opportunity that comes up, it's Trevor May that gets the look. I mean, his strikeout upside is great. He's supporting a strikeout rate per nine innings north of 15 through his first 5.2 innings. And believe me, I fully get that's a very limited sample. The one issue with him is that every once in a while he can get a little wild and drive that walk rate up. But, you know, just take a step back and look at these two guys last year and stack up their 2015s, and you'll understand why I'm leaning Trevor May. He had a better strikeout rate, a better walk rate, a better FIP and XFIP, and a higher overall WAR. I mean, you know, the one thing that was really driving Jepsen being the guy that may have had the more love, frankly, coming into the season, is that, you know, his surface stats were much better. But that was driven by a BABIP of 242 versus May's of 340. So, you know, nothing but profit here when you think about May, and he's more than likely out on your waiver wire right now, especially because he doesn't have a save to his name in 2016. But I would absolutely, you know, be investing in May, and even if it takes a couple saves or a week or two out of Jepsen to lose a potential role, I'm still buying him long term.
Yeah, I'm a big Trevor May fan myself. And you talk about those stats, how they're better than Jepsen last year. You also have to consider, he went into the bullpen the second half of last year and was even better. He struck out 38 guys in 30 innings. I mean, this is a really good relief pitcher. Now, another dark horse, I don't think they're going to give the job to him, but I think he's someone who could get 10 or 15 save opportunities down the road, is Alex Meyer. He's a 6'9", former top 30 prospect. He throws gas, too. That's a guy that I'll be keeping my eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it actually kind of goes to show you that the future from a bullpen perspective may not be so dark for the Twins. I mean, they've got some really, really solid arms, and I'm really excited. I know we're getting off topic a little bit here from the bullpen, but with Jose Berrios, I mean, he's got some really, really exciting potential, and I'm thinking we're probably going to see that sometime in mid or late May at the latest. Meyer's got some big upside as well. I think they want him to be a bit more of a starter long term, so it wouldn't surprise me if he transitions there over the course of the year. But he's a big arm, a big guy, and has plenty of fantasy upside as well. I fully agree with you.
The other guy I want to talk about that just went on the DL is Sin Shu Chu of the Rangers. He went on the DL with a calf strain, so it's not going to be a long-term thing, probably. But, you know, he's had plenty of lower body injuries in the past few years. Is this something he's going to bounce back from, or should fantasy owners be scrambling to pick up Nomar Mazara?
Well, I think it depends more so on what type of league you play in. I mean, in keeper leagues, especially the deeper variety and maybe an AL league, he's probably already owned in terms of Mazara. But take a step back and talk about a quick story. You know, I was really high on Mazara heading into the year. I even made the tough call to keep him as my top minor leaguer in a deep 18-team auction keeper over the likes of A.J. Reed and Blake Snell, if you can actually believe it or not. And the Chu injury and the subsequent call to Mazara is making me look good. And while luck certainly has a lot to do with it, I mean, who can ever see an injury like this coming? One of the reasons I chose Mazara over the others was his path to playing time in Texas, you know, whether or not it was by the way of a Chu injury. I'm definitely not expecting the world from him in year one. I mean, he's not even 21 yet, but he has shown the tool, the hit tool, at every step in the majors and in the minors, excuse me. and has 20 home run power over the course of a full season of at-bats. And for me, I mean, I love when prospects can control the strike zone to keep the ball in play. And so far, he's been able to do just that in regard with a K rate under 20% and a walk rate right around 5.5. So, I mean, in seasonal leagues, I definitely wouldn't rush out to grab him in favor of a guy like a proven Alex Gordon, a Josh Reddick, or like a Matt Holliday, for example. But if you do have an open spot on your bench and want to hold him to see what happens with you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. But that said, I absolutely love him for keeper leagues and feel that he's going to have a very solid MLB career. So in that situation, he's definitely a buy or add candidate for me.
Yeah, I definitely don't think Mazzara is going to be like Carlos Correa last year. I mean, he is the youngest player in the major leagues right now. I'm frankly surprised that you were able to have the foresight that Mazzara would have a path to playing time since he's so young. I thought that Brinson would be the guy, Lewis Brinson, 30-30 potential guy. But Mazzara, I mean, this spring he absolutely tore it up. I saw an interview with the Rangers general manager and assistant general manager who both said that Mazzara might have more power than Joey Gallo. Now, Joey Gallo has 80 power potential. And, you know, this could be something along the lines of just trying to motivate Gallo or give Mazzara some confidence. But, I mean, if you're even putting him in the same conversation as Joey Gallo in power, I mean, this is a special talent. Like you said, with Dynasty Leagues, he's probably already owned. But if he's not, you better be getting him.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And you mentioned Lewis Brinson. Absolutely love him as well. I can't help but feel, though, because they called Mazzara up, that gives you a bit of an indication as to what their plans are. It would not surprise me if Brinson is a guy that they dangle towards the trade deadline. I mean, he's a fantastic talent and has plenty of upside. But speaking that high of a praise of a guy like Mazzara in terms of calling him up over a guy like Brinson, being before his 21st birthday, and starting the major league clock a little bit earlier based on some of those eligibility requirements from a salary perspective, those are some pretty telltale signs that they've kind of made their choice over the two if they are going to only keep one. At the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if they do let both of them kind of find their way into the lineup on an everyday basis. And you know, I mean, the future is certainly bright when it comes to some of their young players because they've got a very solid core.
Now, there's another former top prospect, Javi Baez, who's rehabbing games right now, and he's getting plenty of reps at different positions. When he comes back up with a big league club any day now, are you going to try to grab him in your fantasy leagues?
You know, I want to say yes, but I really just don't know where he's going to fit in with the Cubs at the major league level. I mean, they're a great team. They've got very solid major leaguers and some truly elite ones, to be honest, at just about every spot in the lineup these days. So, I struggle to find, you know, where exactly he's going to be able to unseat some of the regulars for regular playing time. And I'm not sure that Joe Maddon's going to be able to find that with them because, like I said, I just, you know, they've already got the versatile guy on their roster being Ben Zobrist, and they don't really need another one coming off the bench. So for me, honestly, he feels like a really prime trade chip that they're going to start showcasing maybe either closer to the deadline or perhaps in the minors so that he can bide his time and get those at-bats and put up some high-end AAA numbers. But I just don't see him taking over for anyone at the major league level right now. However, that being said, you know, always need to mention the chance of an injury. It happens more often than not these days, and it's certainly a possibility. But if you ask me, I'm definitely not going out of my way to pick him up in favor of someone else that's getting consistent at-bats. You know, for example, a guy like Jonathan Scope is a comparable that comes to mind, and I'd rather, and much rather, use a roster spot on Scope than on Javi Baez.
Yeah, Jared, Baez is a guy who hit 37 homers in the minor leagues a couple years ago, and he stole 20 bases. I mean, this guy has a ton of talent, but he also struck out 147 times against minor league pitchers.
Yeah.
That's a big red flag. He's probably not major league ready, at least on a fantasy level at this point.
Fully agree. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't have that stat on the tip of my tongue, but I knew that he was just an absolute strikeout machine. And last year, even though it was only 28 games, he had a 30% strikeout rate at the major league level. And in 2014, it was 41.5%, and that was in almost 230 plate appearances. So he doesn't walk enough to warrant that kind of number kind of sustaining him in the lineup until he figures that out. And if he does at all, frankly, he's going to be on the sidelines for me as I focus on some much more proven and higher floor players.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And Jared, finally, my favorite news of the week, just an incredibly impressive game by this kid, Vincent Velasquez. Going into Thursday, There had been six games since 1913 where a pitcher had 9 innings pitched, 16-plus strikeouts, no walks, and no runs. Those games were thrown by Dwight Gooden, Kerry Wood, Roger Clemens twice, Randy Johnson, and Max Scherzer. I mean, that is elite company. Just how good can this kid be?
You know, if you asked me this before the season started, I definitely wouldn't have expected this kind of outing from him. I mean, just look at that line. It's truly remarkable. 30 batters faced, 3 hits, no walks, 16 strikeouts. I mean, you know, let's kind of keep it in perspective, though. It was against a pretty hapless San Diego offense that was without Matt Kemp in the lineup. So let's not get too excited. That being said, you know, the guy does have big time strikeout stuff, and you know, across different levels of the minors, he had, you know, double digit K per nine rates of at some points 10, 11, 12 at AA in 2015 across 33 innings. He's always been able to get those Ks, frankly, but the downside for him is, and the downfall even, has really been his walks. You know, last year with the Astros in 55.2 innings, he had a walk rate of 3.4 per nine. And that's not usually, you know, the best indication of being able to get the job done. He did also, and frankly, over the course of his career, has not been able to get the ground ball to be a significant part of his game. And for me, I love focusing on pitchers that have that 50% or higher ground ball rate. You know, last year his was at 31.3%. And he only had, you know, if he continues to stay in that mid-30s, that's a bit of a red flag for me. That being said, his stuff is electric. He has a tremendous amount of upside from a fantasy perspective, but I would not race out to try to trade, you know, a guy like maybe a Jacob deGrom for him right now, even though it might feel tempting. Definitely need to temper your expectations for this being the kind of the regular thing moving forward.
Jared, I think that makes a lot of sense. I really appreciate you joining us today. I think you had excellent insight. And if our listeners want more of that insight, they can go visit Jared's site, moxieball.com. They have a lot of great information. Jared, thanks for joining us. Look forward to talking to you next time.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm now here with Fantasy Pros Braves correspondent Kyle Borgannoni. Kyle's a great follow on Twitter and a very talented writer. If you want to follow him, you can find him at Kyle_Borg. That's B-O-R-G. Good morning, Kyle. How's your week going?
It's going great, but as a Braves fan, not too well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought about leaving out the Braves part and just calling you a Fantasy Pros correspondent. Is it maybe a little embarrassing that I mentioned the Braves part?
No, I actually take pride that we're good at one thing that's being bad right now.
So. Well, it's a really fun rebuilding process. As a person who really likes the minor leagues, I like what the Braves are doing. I mean, it's going to be a couple of years, but you know they're doing it the right way, and you should be happy about that, I think.
Yeah, I actually live like 2 minutes from the AAA stadium, so I'm kind of excited to see some cheap minor league games and see some of these guys that we've acquired.
Kind of a bummer that Malik Smith was called up then, because I'm sure he was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, he's super fun. I'm excited to talk about him today.
Yep, me too. Let's get into it. Okay, so we're going to be doing a couple fun things today. First, we're going to be covering a few important waiver wire pickups. Then I'll ask some burning questions for week 4. Finally, we're going to talk about some of the craziest stats so far this season. Are you ready, Kyle?
Let's go for it.
All right, so Brewers second baseman Scooter Jennett is raking so far this season. He's hit 3 homers despite being one of the smallest players in the league. He's batting .346, and last week he was owned in only 3% of leagues. Now that number's jumped all the way up to 27%. Are you on the Scooter bandwagon, or are people overreacting right now?
You know, I'm not a big believer in Scooter. You know, he's got 3 bombs right now, but it took him until late June last year to hit that total. And I just think that there's so many other second basemen that I'd rather have the rest of the year. He's one of the waiver wire guys that I'm definitely passing on.
I feel the same way about Scooter. And look, I've seen this guy play a lot with the Brewers being in the Cardinals division. He plays really hard. I really like the guy and I root for him. I just don't think he's really going to help many fantasy teams this season. Now, another guy, we already mentioned Malik Smith. He's probably the best bunter in the world. And he's a guy that stole 226 bases in 393 minor league games. That's just an absurd number. So the Braves just called him up, like we already talked about. Is he here for good? And will his production warrant a waiver wire claim?
Yeah, I think stolen bases are down across the board. I know last year they were down 10% from where they've been in the past. So I'm willing to pay for stolen bases. I've seen this guy play in the minor leagues. And with Hector Oliveira being arrested recently, the outfield options in Atlanta are pretty minuscule as it is. I mean, you have Jeff Francoeur and Drew Stubbs as your other outfielders. And so Freddy Gonzalez has also batted this guy leadoff in every game he started so far. So he believes in his talent. He's someone that I definitely would pick up, although he's only got one hit in his 12 appearances, plate appearances so far.
Yeah, well, he's also got stitches in his face because the helmet popped up and cut his face open when he was sliding into second base. This guy's a competitor. I'm really anxious to add him to all my teams this week. I think he's going to be great. He could steal 40 bases for us this year as a waiver wire pickup. Now, sticking with terrible teams in the NL East, Jeanmar Gomez is owned in 28% of leagues, and he's been picking up all the saves for the Phillies. Is he going to keep the role, or is this just a trial period for him?
You know, right now, saves are just so hard to come by, and he's got four saves. I don't really believe in his K rate. It's kind of low from what I've seen. But he's definitely someone that you need to pick up if you're in need of saves. Maybe if that's something you punted in your draft, he's someone that people need to pay attention to. He's only owned in 28% of ESPN leagues, which is shocking to me. But for now, you need to get him. I don't know if he'll keep the job long term, but so far he's done great.
Yeah, and it can't help to add a guy just for 1 or 2 weeks while he is the guy picking up saves. I'm definitely targeting him since I lost Ken Giles to the closer role. Now, a guy who was once called a reliever, and he's still not starting pitcher eligible, is a guy named Brandon Finnegan of the Cincinnati Reds. He's owned in 25% of leagues, and he threw back-to-back good starts against the Phillies and the Cubs. Should we target him in our leagues, or are there better options right now?
You know, when it comes to streamable starters, I'm a big believer in picking up guys like Brandon Finnegan. I picked him up in his last start when he went 6 2/3 of basically no-hit innings, but he also walked 5. And so we got to remember, this guy's a bit wild. He's been wild in the past. But if you're looking for a streamable starter, he's someone out there that I don't mind picking up, especially as he gets to play weaker teams in the NL, such as the Brewers, if he gets a spot start against the Phillies. I'm looking for Brandon Finnegan as someone that can really help my Ks, especially in leagues.
If any of you listeners have a fantasy baseball question, you can always tweet me at BobbyFantasyPro, and I'll be quick to help you out. The other day, Kyle tweeted me about a question about Jeremy Haselbacher, since I'm a Cardinals fan. He's been hitting second for the Cardinals and just carrying this team on his back. Look, Kyle, I wrote a piece about 400 worldwide prospects this offseason, and I had never even heard of Haselbacher. This guy came out of nowhere. What should we make out of this kid? Is his production going to stick?
Yeah, I'm shocked, especially because he wasn't on my radar at all this year. I know he was drafted by the Sox back in the day, the Red Sox. But other than that, this guy's hitting extra bases like it's his job right now. And he's batting second in the hole. So for right now, if he continues to hit in the number two hole, I think he's someone that people should think about picking up. You know, you can drop him and replace him with someone else. But right now, you got to ride the start, especially on a high-powered offense like the Cardinals.
Well, you know, so far the Cardinals have been a high-powered offense, but last year they weren't very good, and I'm not a big believer in the offense. I'm happy with what we've done so far, but I'm not so sure it's going to stick, just like I feel like with Haselbacher. So are there any other free agents you're dying to add to your team this week?
There's a couple guys, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that I've been targeting. I picked up Malik Smith ahead of time, but I guess I got the news being a Braves fan. But there's a couple other guys that are owned in less than 20% of Yahoo leagues. So I feel like listeners, that might be someone they can target. You know, Escobar, I think people are forgetting that last year, this guy was a top 15 in the league in on-base percentage. And right now, he's still raking. He's batting leadoff for the Angels. If you're someone like me, I'm in a league where we use on-base percentage instead of average, I'm okay taking the hit as long as I have someone like Escobar. I'm also looking at Danny Valencia of the A's. He's third base and outfield eligible, only owned in 20% of leagues. And right now, he has a .389 on base percentage. If he's going to bat cleanup for an AL team, and this guy's on the wire, that could be someone that could fulfill a third base position if it's empty for you.
I'm here with Fantasy Bros correspondent Kyle Borgannoni, and he's helping us decipher which free agents are worth picking up this week. Now I'm going to ask him a couple burning questions for week four. So Kyle, the Cubs and the Cardinals are leading the league in runs per game. Are we going to see some serious fireworks in that early week series between the two teams?
Yeah, when I looked at the schedule, what I thought was most interesting in this three-game series is that the top two starters for both the Cubs and the Cardinals won't be pitching. So Jake Heredia and John Lester, as well as Adam Wainwright and Michael Wacha, will not be starting this game. So you're looking at the 3, 4, and 5 starters in this series. And so, you know, you are looking at guys that are above league average for the Cubs, John Lackey, Jason Hamill, and Hendricks. But I'm loading up on a couple of starters in daily games for the Cardinals that are left-handed. So Matt Carpenter and Wong are two guys that I'm jumping on board. Colton Wong is someone that I think is people are going to overlook this next week. And I would load up on some left-handed hitters against these right-handed Cubs starters.
I really like that you mentioned Colton Wong. He's a really streaky player, but you know what? He's hot when he's in important games. And you know the Cardinals think these games against Cubs are important. I wouldn't be surprised to see him break out and have 3 multi-hit games in this series. Sticking in the NL Central, we've got the Brewers who get 2 DH games in Minnesota. Who's going to be the beneficiary of the extra plate appearances in that series?
You know, Chris Carter's been getting most of the starts at first base anyway. I think what they're probably going to do is slide Lucroy and give him a day off at catcher and put him in the DH position. Or maybe even give Ryan Braun a day off in the outfield and put in someone like Kirk Neuenweis. But in terms of fantasy production, I don't really see anybody that's going to take advantage of these games where they get to DH. And remember, back in the day, these Brewers used to be in the American League.
Yeah, I guess there's a reason those guys aren't getting the extra plate appearances at this point anyway. It's because they belong on the bench and they're not fantasy relevant. So your Braves next week get the Marlins and the Dodgers, while the Twins get 4 games against the Brewers. Which of these teams is going to get a win first this season?
The Twins have Irvin Santana going tonight. He's actually had a strong start opening up the year. And then they play Anaheim at home. And that's a series that I think that the Twins can definitely make some noise in. They're a way better team than the Braves. I'm actually shocked that the Twins haven't won a game yet this year. But I'm going to vote for the Twins either winning against Anaheim or the Brew Crew.
So, Kyle, the Diamondbacks are going from Chase Field, which is a great hitter's park, over to San Francisco, which is just terrible for hitters. Should we be avoiding their hitters next week outside of Paul Goldschmidt?
When I look at that series, the pitchers that the Giants have lined up are Jake Peavy in Game 1, Matt Cain, Bumgarner, and then Cueto for that 4-game series. And so I'm looking at the Diamondbacks lineup, and when I did some research, I found that there's a couple of guys that have had major success at AT&T Park as left-handers, and it's actually my guy, David Peralta. I know Bobby, you and I have been talking about him since the beginning of the year. Did you know that this guy last year hit .429 at AT&T Park, and he had 11 extra base hits against the Giants? I mean, this guy can rake. He hit .397 against the Giants for the entire year. And even Jake Lamb, the third baseman, he had a .433 on base percentage last year at AT&T Park. This guy can hit righties, and these aging veterans like Jake Peavy and Matt Cain, they're way past their primes. I think sometimes in our minds we think Jake Peavy and Matt Cain are still Cy Young caliber starters, but they're way past it. And last week I actually used this strategy in some DFS matchups. I used left-handed batters against these Giants starters with some players with Colorado, and last night I did great with Charlie Blackmon and Carlos Gonzalez and Nolan Arenado. So I think that they'll be fine as long as you just load up on lefties and then sit them against Bumgarner.
Those are some really good stats. I love all David Peralta stats. I've come to make that decision. So, Kyle, we know it's been a crazy season. There's been a lot of great stats going on, coming from a replacement shortstop setting home run marks to Zach Greinke getting bombed in back-to-back games. What I want you to do is give me your top 5 wackiest stats of the year, starting at number 5.
Yeah, number 5, we're talking about our guy that you and I talked about earlier, in Hasselbacher. Do you know that he's 2nd in the league in ISO, meaning in terms of raw power and how often someone hits extra base hits? This guy's 2nd in the league behind only Trevor Story. You know, right now he has a 500 ISO power average, which in the minor leagues, the best that he ever did was literally half that, a 261. So this guy is raking in extra base hits, 2nd in the league.
I saw that his slugging percentage was up around 1,000, and I just laughed. It's amazing what the Cardinals do turning out these players like Alan Craig, David Freese, Tommy Pham. Where did these guys come from? All right, and what's your number 4 crazy stat for the season?
Number 4 is a guy that's actually from my hometown. Brian McCann actually right now leads the majors in weighted run created plus average. So what that means is, when you adjust park factors and context and everything, Brian McCann actually has the highest total production of what they say is he's the best hitter right now. And granted, he only has 22 plate appearances, but This guy has a 583 batting average on batted balls in play. So this guy is raking right now, and I think people aren't taking notice just yet.
Until you mentioned it, I didn't even know Brian McCann was having a good season. Those are some great numbers, and I'm going to have to pay attention to see if he's able to keep it up. So moving on to number three, what stat do you have for us?
So this shocked me. The guy who leads the majors in plate appearances isn't a leadoff hitter. It's not a guy like Jose Altuve, although he's up there. Prince Fielder leads the majors in total plate appearances thus far. And granted, they've had a couple extra inning games, but Prince Fielder's batting 194. It's not like this guy's getting on base, and it's not like he's a speedy leadoff guy, but he's got 44 plate appearances, which so far through the first couple weeks, that leads the majors.
I'm not so sure that that tells us anything on fantasy terms, but that's a really interesting number. He would have been like the last person in the league that I would have guessed. Okay, so what's your number two stat?
My number two stat right now isn't anything too shocking, but it's the fact that nobody's talking about Nick Markakis. He leads the league in doubles, and that's something that he's done since he's been in the league. He's been a doubles machine. Right now, he has his hard hit percentage on balls in play is 44%, which is more than double what he's doing in his career. And watching these Braves games, this guy has actually been hitting the ball with authority. And while he can't hit it over the fence anymore, it wouldn't shock me if Markakis led the league in doubles the rest of the year.
You know, he's had a really fine career, and he's dropped off quite a bit from where he used to be, but he sure has been impressive early this season. So finally, Kyle, what's your top craziest stat of the year so far?
All right, so this one's a bit silly, but Andrelton Simmons used to be, you know, our Braves shortstop. He's already grounded into four double plays this year, which is ridiculous considering, you know, he's a shortstop. He's a guy that a middle infielder that should be able to beat out this, but he's on pace right now for 72 times grounding into a double play, which would more than double the record that Jim Rice set in 1984. So I don't know how. I haven't been watching Angels games. It's on the West Coast. But right now, this guy's leading the league in a category you don't want to lead in.
I think being on Albert Pujols' team, he must have picked that up from him because Pujols used to ground into so many double plays. All right, Kyle, I really appreciate you sharing those stats with us. Looking forward to seeing what kind of crazy stats we get the rest of the season. Thanks a lot for joining us and look forward to chatting with you next time.
All right, sounds good. Take it easy.
We've now got Fantasy Pros Brewers correspondent JP Gale with us. JP blogs on head-to-head strategy at his site, headtowin.com, and that's the number two. His Twitter handle is GoJPG. Good morning, JP.
Good morning, Bobby. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. So baseball's just been amazing this year. First, last week we were buzzing about Trevor Story. Now, how about this Vincent Velasquez for the Phillies?
He's been incredible, especially yesterday against the lowly Padres, who just can't seem to hit right-handed pitching.
You know, and I was looking at the Phillies. Everyone was expecting them to lose 100 games this year, and they still very well might. They've gone through the rotation twice so far, and they've got 63 innings pitched, 75 Ks, a 2.14 ERA, and a 0.81 whip. That is just phenomenal. That's awesome for baseball right there.
It really is. It's really incredible.
Yeah, they've got Velasquez, and then who else do they even have?
Hellickson, Jared Eichhoff, and that's about all I know. So yeah, it's a great surprise.
You know, I'm maybe even more fond of the story of Hazelbacker. I can't even remember his first name right now, even though I've already talked about him in the show. I mean, this was a guy that was cut from the Dodgers AAA team last year, and now he's leading the entire earth in hitting and knocking extra base hits left and right.
He's fantastic. He's already a $3,100 player on FanDuel, and so far he's been amazing. Three home runs, 13 hits and 27 at-bats, two stolen bases. He's doing a little bit of everything for him and playing good defense in center.
That's right. So, JP, we have another great night of baseball. I'm sure there's going to be some more stories that develop. We've got 14 night games, which makes for some really juicy DFS play. So I'm going to ask you a few questions to help our listeners build their DFS lineups tonight and hopefully earn some money. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Excellent. So in DFS, we've got cash games where you make less money, but you have a higher chance to win. These are your head-to-head games and double-ups. Then you've got the GPP games, which are tournaments. You have very high prize money, and you have to take some gambles on players if you actually want a chance to win. So who do you consider the best cash game pitcher for tonight?
A lot of really good options. We have five pitchers that cost more than $10,000 on FanDuel, and I'm going to jump outside that group to grab Garrett Richards of the Angels against the Twins for $8,700. I like Richards against a Twins team that currently has, they haven't won a game yet this year, and they have a 102 ISO. They're striking out at a 28.5% rate, and they're slashing 201, 278, 304 to start the season. I think Garrett Richards, his price is just a little too low given his upside. He's still getting strikeouts in both of his starts so far this year. He has 7 strikeouts against the Cubs, 6 against Texas, and those are two pretty good lineups. So this is his first chance against a lesser offense, and the only thing that's really keeping him back is that win. And when you get 12 points for a win, I think Garrett Richards has a real good shot. They aren't favored incredibly well. I see that it's LA minus 116 is the line, but I think that should be a little higher. I really like Garrett Richards tonight, and I think he can get you a good amount of strikeouts, and he can go 6-plus innings and get a win against the Twins.
You know, I was really expecting you to go with either Kershaw or Bumgarner, but, you know, with those two against each other and the win being so important, I think it makes a lot of sense to save a lot of money and go down and get Garrett Richards. He's a great buy tonight. Now, how about your one or two best pitchers for GPP contests tonight, JP?
We'll start a little bit more expensive, although less than Garrett Richards. $7,200 for Joe Ross against Philly. He got 45 points in his first start versus Miami. He got that win. Phillies are striking out at a 25.2% rate, and they're hitting 216, 278, 363. He's up against that early ace, Jeremy Hellickson. But I just think Washington is their favored heavily, minus 143. He's got a really good shot at a win, and he can go 6-plus innings tonight.
I mean, what is going on with these 28% team strikeout rates? I mean, if a player had a 25% strikeout rate 15 years ago, he would have never made it to the major leagues. This is just absurd.
It sure is. The game is changing.
All right, so moving over to hitters, we're going to need some money to be able to buy Garrett Richards, or if you're going to go up and get Clayton Kershaw, you're going to need even more money. So, JP, give us one or two infielders or one or two outfielders that are under 3K that you really like tonight.
Jonathan Scope sticks out to me. Baltimore is in Texas against Martin Perez. Martin Perez has trouble so far this year against right-handed hitters. They're hitting 267, 432, 379 against him. That's only against 38 batters. So in his career against righties, they're hitting 280, 343, 425. Scope has the ability to hit home runs. He hits them off more righties than he does lefties, but I still think he's a nice play tonight in Texas against a lesser lefty. And for outfielders, I really like Mitch Moreland in the same game against the Baltimore Orioles. Are rolling out Vance Worley, who is not the best pitcher. And Mitch Moreland has been solid. He's got hits in 8 of his last 10 games. And he's a power threat, even though he has yet to hit home run this year. He definitely has that power in his bat.
JP, I'm really glad you brought up Scope. If you use our daily projections on our site, fantasypros.com, Jonathan Scope is predicted to get 1.3 home runs tonight. I mean, that doesn't sound like much, but that just means he's going to get a home run once every 6 games that he plays in. And that's extremely high for a second baseman. In fact, the only people above him are substantially more expensive. If you can get a guy like that in a position that you're punting that can hit a home run, that's golden for DFS. So, JP, who are two hitters in the 3,000 to 4,000 range tonight that you won't be leaving out of your lineups?
My two hitters tonight are D. Gordon for 3,800. He is he's leading off for the Marlins. They play against Atlanta. And Williams Perez. D. Gordon, he's not a home run threat, but he's a stolen base threat. Stolen bases still get you points. I think he can steal a base or two and score a couple runs. He's had hits in 8 of his last 10 games with 4 multi-hit games. He's got a really nice floor, and while you're not chasing a floor in a GPP, I think he's a great cash play. And I have him in a GPP lineup, so I'm not fading him in those types of games. And I also like Matt Carpenter against the Cincinnati Reds and newcomer Timothy Melville, a righty who I really don't know much about, but he's making his debut against the Cardinals in St. Louis. It's a tough environment. Matt Carpenter, again, another leadoff hitter, and a great hitter at that. He's got power. He's got run scoring ability, on base ability. He has scored 20 or more points in 4 of his last 5 games. I think he's a really solid start tonight at third base.
Yeah, you mentioned Tim Melville going to pitch in St. Louis. He's actually from St. Louis. He struggled a lot with his command in the minor leagues. I think the Cardinals are going to put a lot of runs on him tonight, and Matt Carpenter is at the forefront of it. He's 3,900 on FanDuel tonight, but we project him for 11.6 FanDuel points tonight, and I think that's a really nice value for a high-priced player. And finally, JP, who are two studs tonight that are worth spending big bucks on?
Well, the obvious choice would be Mike Trout against Tommy Malone of the Twins. Target Field is a fly ball park. Mike Trout can hit fly balls out of the park. He is one of the best players in baseball, and for $4,900, that almost seems like a value. He's $400 cheaper than Bryce Harper, and I think he's the better play tonight if you're really paying up for an outfielder. My other choice would be Manny Machado, who is, again, $4,700 is high, but it's not high enough for Machado. He has hits in 9 of his last 10 games. He's a multi-hit machine. Power, not a lot of speed so far this year, but it's possible. And he gets to face Martin Perez, a lefty. So he has the handedness advantage. He's in Texas. I think if you're paying up at third base, Machado would be a great play.
Yeah, I sure do love myself some Manny Machado. The thing that concerns me about him is tonight the wind's blowing in. They're saying at 13 miles per hour in Texas, and you know that's still a home run ballpark, so he could definitely go deep there. I think that's going to be a slugfest even with the wind. I like it, Machado, in my lineup tonight, especially batting second in that Orioles lineup. As always, JP, it's a pleasure, and thanks for coming on the show. Have a great weekend, and good luck tonight in DFS.
You too, Bobby. Thanks so much. Good luck.
All right, thank you. Take care. That's all we have for you on the show today. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe on iTunes and tune in next Friday afternoon. And as always, if you want to shoot me an email and ask questions or have any thoughts, you can reach me at bobby@fantasypros.com or tweet me at @BobbyFantasyPro. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.